Drive Time on RTE Radio 1 with National Irish Bank. The bank that brought Danske Bank's international expertise to Ireland is now bringing the Danske Bank name.
Piles of bodies are being buried with bulldozers in the regional South Sudanese capital of Bentiu. Hate messages broadcast over radio encourage supporters of one ethnic group to cheer on the slaughter of those siding with the government. James Copnell, South Sudan analyst and author of A Poisonous Thorn in Our Heart, joins me now. 20 years and 2 weeks on exactly, this has all the worst echoes of the Rwandan genocide. Can you elaborate on what happened here?
Well, a war has been going on since December of last year, and there have been numerous massacres, but this one in Bentiu is certainly one of the most shocking. The United Nations say that after rebel troops took control of the town, they killed people in hospitals, in churches, in a mosque, hundreds of people dead, at least as many wounded. And as you say, they accuse the rebels of broadcasting hate speech on the radio. And that is the echo, along with the ethnicized killings of Rwanda, though I think it's important to point out it's nothing like on the scale of Rwanda. Now, the rebels have denied it. Many of the rebel commanders have denied participation in these massacres, though one privately off the record did affirm that his troops had in fact been responsible for this. It is important to point out too that government troops also have been accused of and indeed have committed massacres in other parts of the country. But as I say, this one is particularly shocking.
And the messages on radio, do we know anything about their content?
Well, one of the things that the United Nations, who was monitoring these messages, said is that there were incitement to commit violent sexual acts on women from competing ethnic groups, or an ethnic group seen as a rival to the one of the rebels. And that, of course, is extremely shocking. The UN did say, too, that there had been some messages of reconciliation, too, amongst the hate mongering, but certainly some direct appeals for violence.
So the Dinka community, the government supporting ethnic group within this city, where are they now? Have they all fled their homes?
Yes, there's a lot of people who have fled. In fact, many Dinka had fled even before this. So it's a very complicated picture. But the rebels, who are largely Nuer, are accused of killing not just Dinkas and non-Nuers, but also people from their own ethnic group who hadn't given them sufficient support, and also people from across the border in Sudan who they accuse of backing the government troops. But at the moment, there are more than 20,000 people who fled to a UN base, and they're in a pretty desperate situation there. The last figures I heard was there was something like one latrine for every 350 people, only a litre of drinking water per person, well below the international minimum standards, and a desperate rush to get help for these people in what is, of course, still a very dangerous and difficult security situation.
So there is an immediate or looming humanitarian crisis, but I would have thought that something like this, literally as it is springtime, sows the seeds for bigger problems. People should be out planting in the fields.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And not just this massacre in Bentiu, but also fighting really throughout the country. The rainy season is about to start in earnest in South Sudan. People should be out planting. They're not going to be because of the fighting. And the latest estimates suggest something like 7 million people could have problems with food security, as the aid agencies call it. 7 out of every 10 South Sudanese at risk. Already malnutrition rates are climbing. And what happens when those harvests don't arrive because no one has been able to sow the fields, it really doesn't bear thinking about. So there's a huge international call for aid right now, because the aid agencies, the UN, say they haven't got enough money to deal with this problem. There's going to be a conference in Oslo in a few weeks to try and raise some more cash. But I think just as importantly, the rebels and the government, who are involved in fairly fruitless peace talks in neighbouring Ethiopia, need to get serious, need to stop the fighting. Otherwise, this could get really a lot worse.
I heard one United Nations official describe this this massacre in Bentiu as a game changer. Any signs of an institutional response that would indicate that they view it as a game changer?
I don't see it, to be perfectly honest. There have been the usual condemnations from the government and denials from the rebels. And the reverse would be true if it had been the other way around, if the accusations had been going in a different direction. The United States has called this an abomination, and that's possibly significant because the US has talked about imposing sanctions on leaders who block peace in South Sudan. And this is, I remind you, only 3 years since South Sudan became independent. So the descent into hell, really, from the joys of independence has been a very, very quick one. There is, of course, then this appeal from the United Nations and others for more funds to do something about the conflict. But it's, you know, it's early days after the news of this massacre came out this week. But so far, there hasn't been that dramatic change that millions of South Sudanese are looking for.
What is the size of the existing UN contingent there, and what is their mandate?
Well, when this war started, there were already something like 7,000 UN peacekeepers in place. That's because South Sudan only became independent in 2011, and there'd been a north-south civil war within Sudan before that. And the peacekeepers were sort of a remnant from that. And they have a mandate to protect civilians. Once the conflict began, I think it's something like 5,000 more troops were voted to be sent in, but I don't think all of them have arrived yet. This sort of thing does take some time. So essentially what happens is the UN, by and large, is able to protect civilians on its bases. Something like 70,000 people have fled to UN bases, more now actually with this Bentiu massacre. And in general, they have been safe there, although last week there was an attack on a UN base in the town of Bor, and dozens of people were killed there, more than 50, in fact. So even on a UN base, people haven't been entirely safe. But in general, they have been in something like security. But what the UN peacekeeping mission hasn't been able to do is go beyond its bases, to put itself in between the warring parties, to monitor the cessation of hostilities agreement they signed in January, but both sides haven't respected. And it would take far, far greater resources in terms of men and equipment for the UN to be able to think about doing something like that. Mm-hmm. But something like that is desperately needed because the fighting still continues.
Were the international community not to respond to this, is there any sign of either of the warring parties having the upper hand and this being resolved, basically, by one side winning?
The balance changes. So the rebels have got a slight upper hand at the moment, having taken the town of Bentiu, also the town of Mayom, threatening some oil fields, which could add to the economic pressure on the President Salva Kiir. But a few weeks ago, the rebels were on the back foot, having lost several towns and suffered some military defeats. I think the suspicion is that neither side can win this war militarily. Certainly the history of conflict in southern Sudan before it became independent. There were two civil wars with the Sudanese capital Khartoum, north-south civil wars. The first one lasted for 17 years and the second one for 22 years. It's almost impossible to defeat rebel troops in South Sudan. It's sort of perfect guerrilla territory. During the rainy season, most of the roads are impassable so that the better armed government can't move its tanks and other vehicles around, and rebels can always regroup during the rainy season and take advantage of those sort of conditions. So my guess would be that neither side can win militarily, but equally neither side at the moment seems to be prepared to take the necessary steps to move towards peace.
James Copnell, author of A Poisonous Thorn in Our Heart, thank you very much for your analysis.